You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. Thanks so much for listening. A ton to get to on this edition of the podcast as LSU has plenty of players arriving in Indianapolis this week for the NFL Combine. We'll focus mostly on that, as well as the long-awaited move for Ed Ogeron to name a new running backs coach, replacing Tommy Robinson with Kevin Faulk. We'll react to that, as well as look ahead to the week and also take a step back and review the Mardi Gras weekend that was. I'm Billy Embody. With me now, Shay Dixon, to kick off this edition of the pod. Shay D, it's been rolling with NFL Combine info already this morning with quite a few LSU players not working out in Indianapolis, but not really surprising.
Well, yeah, and we're recording this podcast on Tuesday morning around 10 a.m., so 11 a.m. Indy time. The interviews seem to be wrapping up for the day, but we found out that most notably Joe Burrow has said that he will not throw or work out this week. Grant Delpit reports have come out from multiple different news outlets that he will not work out this week. And then Moss and Caleb on Chaisson. So Thaddeus Moss at tight end, and obviously Chaisson as an edge rusher, will not work out this week. And pretty much all of them said they're going to wait until LSU's pro day, and kind of for different reasons. We know Delpit's been banged up at different times during the season. He said it's about getting healthy. Burrow said, look, we played all the way until mid-January. So at this point, I'm looking for some extra rest. I'll throw at my pro day. Billy, I guess knowing all of them, I'd be maybe most surprised at Chaisson a bit, but it seems that each of them are kind of saying, look, we played longer than anyone beyond Clemson, obviously. We took a couple weeks off, and because of that, we want some extra time before we go through workouts.
Yeah, I will disagree with you on Chaisson. I think it's big for him not to work out at the NFL Combine. I think for him, coming off the season that he had, he was banged up at times early on, especially, and came on really strong, right? I mean, he had one of the more dominant finishes I think we've probably seen out of a defensive end in quite a while. And the reason why I'm not surprised he's not working out, and I don't think he should, is because that gives him another month to get his 40 time down. That's another month to train on all of his shuttles and agility drills and work out in space and do all those things, because that's what he's probably going to be asked of the most, I think, in these workouts with NFL teams is going through those types of drills and those types of movements. And so I'm not surprised that Caleb on Chaisson didn't work out at the NFL Combine. And I think I was kind of more surprised that Thad Moss didn't, to be honest. And I know he had a big season as the top tight end statistically in LSU history in a single season. But I think if he would have ran well and all of that, and I think he had a lot more to gain in terms of moving up his draft stock. I don't think he's solidified as a day two pick like some people think, at least in NFL draft circles. But look, somebody that's certainly not going on day two of the NFL draft is Joe Burrow. And that leverage comment made at the Davey O'Brien Award ceremony in Fort Worth by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and when he was receiving the award in Dallas about being able to control what he can do and control his draft process, he cleared that up and said, look, I'm going to go where I'm drafted and I'll, of course, play for Cincinnati. That comment, he said, was made about controlling his actual NFL draft process, which means I don't want to work out at the combine. I don't need to work out at the combine. I'm not going to work out at the combine. So he kind of squashed that anti-Cincinnati chatter that was really coming from just kind of the media drumming that up. And you even mentioned it on the last pod that we did that it was kind of nothing really to it.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really thought that at the end of the day he would, as people were saying, pull an Eli, but put himself into a position where he basically said, no, I'm not signing with you. And he had comments today like, look, I'm two hours from my parents' house. I can go home for dinner. Not many people get to do that in the NFL. on and on about how there's no reservations he has right now about playing for the Cincinnati Bengals, being taken at number one. He came out and killed it right off the bat with the first question, killed all of the chatter by just saying, I'm a ball player, basically. I'm going to play with whoever picks me. And I'll add that Zach Taylor, the coach of the head coach of the Bengals, and Joe Burrow have both said that they have not met each other this week. That'll happen later in the week for their head coach and potential number one pick sit down. But you've got to remember, too, I think as teams meet with Burrow, A, they'll be falling more and more in love with him. Not that the Bengals don't want to take him, but because you get to just talk ball, which is what Burrow said he's here for this week when he's not working out. We know that as the son of a coach, that's something he's always probably really strived on. Orgeron talked about that when he got here on his official visit, that they talked ball, and it was so evident that he was light years ahead of where everybody else they had in the building was, and that was a major reason he came in and started right away. But I'll add this. Remember, Taylor played at Nebraska as a quarterback back in 2007, maybe right before that. But they've got the Burrow connection there. As a former player, I'm sure he knows everything there is to know about Joe Burrow and vice versa, given that Joe's dad and both his brothers played at Nebraska. And people even already commented that the last time a quarterback measured in, and we'll talk about this next, the big hand measurement, only 9 inches, the last quarterback, Billy, to go 9 inches and be, or at least one of the last ones to go high in the draft, was Jared Goff. His quarterback coach when he came out, Zach Taylor. So connections all over the board. Burrow squashing it means that at least for the next month, we can talk about other things. We don't have to talk about the idea that Joe Burrow is going to back out of the number one pick.
You mentioned those small hands. Do you think it's a big deal? I don't think it is. But look, there's all sorts of statistics you could play back and forth with this stuff. I mean, Patty Mahomes coming out and saying, look, man, I'm doing just fine with my small hands. Don't you worry about it. But then, of course, there's people that will point to other NFL draft picks, highly rated ones that had the small hands, didn't work out. What's your thought on hand gate?
Okay, so yeah, so I don't think it's a big issue at all. It wouldn't be any reason for me to hesitate picking him in this draft right now. You know, I've seen the film. I know what he can do. So there I have no real worry. I do now. That's college. NFL, the only thing I've seen out there, which to me, and I guess when you think of hand size, you think, okay, the NFL ball's a little bit bigger. Is he going to throw it the same? How does he look? Teams are going to have him throwing. They're going to have him at LSU's pro day. They're going to get to do private workouts with him and kind of pull him aside and talk to him about things. They're going to have everything they need to know about that. But, Billy, I'll ask you this. You work in the NFL, done plenty of stuff with the Redskins. The one thing I've seen that I'm like, okay, that could make some sense to me, is that cold weather games or cold weather teams or wet weather teams, that could be where you worry about someone's hand size. Now, in your time working around NFL teams, have you ever, I know it's Washington, D.C., it does get cold there, is hand size, is fumbling by quarterbacks because of their hand size like a big talking point?
I don't know if it's a huge talking point, but I'll say this. The NFL ball is a lot, I mean, in relative size to the college football version, it's a lot bigger. Like, I remember was doing some pre-draft workouts. This was back when I was in high school, and I was a senior in high school, and I'd been working out, throwing college footballs, getting ready to walk on and all that stuff. And it was pretty cool. John Gruden's kid went to my high school. And so John would bring in all of the draft guys that they would do the show with to work them out. All the quarterbacks, Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, all of those guys came through Tampa, and we actually got to throw with them. And you know, I threw with Cam and Tim Tebow, and then our receivers worked them out. And this was back in the early days before they brought in all the college receivers in the NFL and really did up the production value for Gruden's like draft thing that he would do with these guys. That NFL ball was like a big step up, and I'm sure my hands aren't anywhere close to Burrow's, but it was a big step up. So I don't have any concerns about Burrow. Like you said, the film, all that stuff is out there, but the NFL ball is actually considerably bigger than the college ball. It's a different looking football. So he will have to adjust. It will be something that he'll have to kind of figure out. But you know, Joe, I mean, he's a gamer. He's pretty lax with this stuff, type of stuff, I would say, is probably the way I would describe it. He's going to think of it as playing football. He'll figure it out. He's figured it out how to make things work for him in the past and certainly this season. So I'm not worried at all about his hand size on this one.
I would think also, too, that with the amount of stuff Schefter and Kuiper and McShay and all these NFL guys who sort of lead the way, what they get, that what he's been working out, what are we, February 20-something, probably for a month, throwing and working with wherever he's at. I think he was in California at some point. But point being, like, wouldn't it have leaked out if they were like, look, sources are saying that the transition from the college to NFL ball is really – been kind of a rocky one or something like that, if it were evident that it were a big deal and he wasn't looking just like he did before.
Yeah, and I think what we would have seen is a little bit of a spin from his camp in some sense. If that was the case, maybe. But look, we're going to see him work out at Pro Day. We're going to see him throw the football there. I have very little concern that he's going to look any different in a pre-draft, shorts and t-shirt, orchestrated, scripted throwing session with an NFL football. So I think we can kind of put to rest how his hands will impact at least his pre-draft process. And we'll find out when he takes the field, whenever that is, for most likely the Cincinnati Bengals. But as Patty Mahomes told him, this is not something that I'd be worrying about too much. Although we just spent quite a few minutes talking about it. One thing that I think we can move on to now is, I think probably one of the more interesting things that came out of the NFL Draft Combine is CeeDee Lamb dishing out the praise to LSU corner and All-American Derek Stingley Jr., calling him the best corner he faced in all of college football. This is not really shocking news to, I think, you or me.
No, I think it's probably a pretty honest statement. It's not the first time we've heard beyond CeeDee Lamb, other guys this year have come out and said that about Stingley. I thought it was, and this is not a knock at all on Bo Nix, who won SEC Freshman of the Year. I thought that Derek Stingley had a better freshman season. I would not have. Even removing covering LSU, I watched plenty of Auburn's football games. I can look at their stats. I know that Derek Stingley had a better freshman season than Bo Nix. He should have won that award. He was an All-American on the freshman level, be an All-American as he continues through college. No doubt there. And we're talking NFL Combine stuff, NFL Draft stuff. Good for us to include Stingley into this one, because then we'll include him again next year. And then finally, in 2 years on the pod, we'll be talking about him going as a probably top five pick. So we knew coming in, what we had him as the highest ranked corner in the history of 24/7. Not we, but the company did. And he's lived right up to what everybody thought he would be, which is the best cornerback, best defensive back in college football.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to 2 years from now. I'll be 30 when we're talking about Derek Stingley Jr. as a draft prospect. So that's scary stuff there. Scary stuff there. But he will be one of the best NFL draft prospects out there. There's very little doubt about that. He'll be one of the best college football players over the next 2 years as well. He's got plenty of time to improve his stock. LSU players that are in the NFL draft process right now, it'll be here before they know it. Quick 2 months, they'll blink, it'll be draft day. Just under 2 months to the NFL draft. Who improves their stock the most this week? And as it's kind of early, too, because we don't know who's going to also make the call to not work out. But I think Patrick Queen, if he ends up working out, he's got one of the best shots to improve his draft stock. His athleticism, he's probably viewed in a way as kind of the other linebacker next to Jacob Phillips, who started a little bit longer than Queen did. But, I mean, his athleticism, his frame, all the things he can do, he's rushed a passer. I think he's got a chance to really boost his stock this week if he works out.
Yeah, like that. I'm going with, I've been riding that Clyde Edwards-Helaire train for a bit, and I think there's no reason to bail on that when right now he goes into a week where he can interview with people, which he'll do really well with. He's unbelievable with the media. He's always been a coach's favorite. I mean, all of the, from Les Miles to Orgeron, they've always praised him as one of the leaders, and He'll do well in an interview setting. Then he's going to work out, and more importantly for me, he'll test. And he, in high school, which he checked in today, about 7 pounds heavier than he was leaving high school. He ran a verified 4.47, a 4.04 shuttle, a 39.8 vert. If he can get anywhere near 40 inches this week in a vertical, I know his shuttle is going to be low because we saw what he can do with that lateral movement just as a junior this past year with so many of his plays coming off that. Maybe he's not running a 4.47, but I don't think he's going to be anywhere in what people would deem slow because of that. I've just said it. I think, Billy, everyone's got to be looking for a reason. Knowing what he did on film, knowing he can catch it and run it, knowing he can pass protect for you, and knowing that even at his size, he got it done at the highest level in the SEC, teams are going to love him. They're going to want to be looking for another reason to say, I don't care that he's 5'7". I think the combine will give him that sort of extra push, and he'll move up some boards.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick as well. I think he's already raising his stock. We saw it on NFL.com, them moving him up into the top overall 32 players, at least according to Daniel Jeremiah on his top, you know, group of players. And I think that says a lot for a running back in today's NFL, where it's just not as big of a premium position to draft them in the first round. Very, very few guys have earned that. No doubt, that's the guy you need to pick in the first round. He's worth a first round draft pick as a running back. Very few guys have done that. And while that doesn't mean that Clyde will go in the first round by any means, getting into that top 32 range is pretty impressive for him. And that's before he's even touched the field as an NFL draft prospect. Shay, I think we've talked a good bit about the combine now. One player that went through the combine way back in the day, one of the best in LSU history, Kevin Faulk, the new LSU running backs coach. We're going to talk about him taking over for Tommy Robinson on the flip side of this break from the Go 24/7 podcast.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SMOOTH at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SMOOTH. Enjoy!
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the Go 24/7 podcast. Thanks for listening. Quick reminder, guys, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. If you like the new format with kind of us running down five big things, then taking on a big topic on the other side of the break, and also, you know, whatever you like about the podcast or dislike, let us know. Shay, something that LSU fans really seem to like, the news broke late Monday night. Kevin Faulk replacing Tommy Robinson as the running backs coach. We've told Go 24/7 subscribers this for weeks now, it seems, that Kevin Faulk was going to take over as running backs coach. He was on the recruiting trail this spring, even alongside Tommy Robinson, recruiting Kevontae Bradford. We've already heard from LJ Johnson, the LSU legacy, that Kevin Faulk's been recruiting him for quite a while. This is a very natural move for Ed Ogeron, upgrading in his mind the running backs coach position and getting one of the greatest players in LSU history on the field coaching.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that when they hired Kevin, when Coach O brought Kevin Faulk onto the staff and put him in that sort of off-field role that was also very heavily involved, not just with player development on the team, but also the recruiting side of things. It was evident that, hey, look, at one point, Kevin Faulk's going to be an on-field coach for a college team, and Ed Orgeron appears to be sort of putting them on the track right now for the Tigers to be that team. And sure enough, it didn't take very long. And you laid it out, but we knew because of the reality that Tommy Robinson's contract expired next month in March, and there had not been any word yet reports that he was getting a new contract or his contract extended. There had been nothing put in front of the Board of Supervisors, and that had been the case for other coaches on the staff, whether their contracts were up this offseason or not. So we knew then that something was up. You couple that with Billy, we had reported, and it had been reported elsewhere, that he was interviewing at multiple different schools. So the exit strategy was already in play with Kevin Faulk, then moving right in. As you said, he had been on the road recruiting for him, which was sort of a benefit there. Like, he wasn't on the road in place of Tommy Robinson, but with Joe Brady and Dave Aranda both gone from the staff, they were sort of in that, point before signing day and even leading up through signing day, where both Linehan and Bo Pelini had not both been hired yet. So they got to put Kevin Faulk out on the road as kind of in the place of Aranda or in place of Joe Brady, however you want to look at it. And because of that, he got to know guys, not just in the senior class finishing up with Bradford, but as you said, LJ Johnson, Kamar Wheaton, some of these kids for next year are now this current cycle that they're going to want to recruit and be in on and are already recruiting, obviously. And the fact that he got to go out there and make some of those relationships, start to build on them even more than what he knew when they came to campus, I think is big. So from that perspective, we get it. Now I think people will wonder, Billy, okay, well, how good of a coach is he? No doubt he can recruit for you. He's a legend. He's one of the most famous players ever to play at LSU. He's from Louisiana. Bill Belichick has called him his favorite player he's ever coached. He's won a bunch of Super Bowls. But what kind of coach does he become? And for me, and I'll let you weigh in because I know that you're around NFL personnel and coaches a lot more, but I feel like for someone who's played the position as long as he has and is as heady as he is, because he's always been praised for being a student of the game and being able to apply that onto the field and being someone who can kind of do everything you need from a running back. Because of that, I think you kind of can become a good teacher and understand really that running back, and I'm not trying to knock running back as a position that's not tough to coach or something like that. I don't have that sort of extensive knowledge of being a running backs coach, but I would think it would be easier, Billy, for a guy to make that jump than it would to be, a quarterback's coach, an offensive coordinator, whatever may involve a lot more people with running back. I feel like he's been around it long enough at these practices, been around it long enough just playing the game, that this is an easy transition and he probably can prove his worth rather quickly.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'll say it because you didn't say it. Running back is kind of a easy position to coach. That's where a lot of coaches actually build up their resumes, coaching running backs. That's kind of a recruiting position as well, so head coaches will often stick some of their best recruiters in there. I think Ed Orgeron just thought he can upgrade this spot. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I was working on some draft stuff for him this morning, and I stumbled upon his quotes about Kevin Faulk at the national championship game at Media Day, and a couple highlights for you. So Clyde's stepdad's from Lafayette, Kevin Faulk from Lafayette. Obviously, that'll help it with Sage Ryan, who's a big target for LSU in 2021. There's a lot of good talent in Lafayette and Acadiana coming up as well. Here's two things that stood out to me. Kevin Faulk and Clyde Edwards-Helaire talked every day. He was in the running back room. He was always around that group. And Clyde said that throughout the weekend, they get done with a game, kind of let him sit on that game and kind of think it over and go back over some film. And then Saturday night, late night, Kevin Faulk's texting him, hitting him up, letting him know some thoughts, things like that. And I think that just kind of shows kind of the dedication that Kevin Faulk had already put into the position ahead of time. And then the next one was that their first conversation wasn't, hey, what's up? We're trying to get to know each other. Kevin Faulk said to him, how do you pass through your height? Very simple. We're going to work on it. And literally, Clyde said, I want to say 3 or 4 hours later, we were indoors working on it. That's, I think, what Kevin Faulk is going to bring. This understanding of the position, like you mentioned, having played it for so many years, and the trust that the running backs will have in him because of that, because of his resume, because of how much he cares, and especially cares about LSU, he'll be a big positive for this group. So I'm excited to see what he does. I think he's got, obviously, the resume on the field to do it, and he's clearly built a big rapport with the players so far in that room. And even Ty Davis Price and John Emery kind of mentioned it to me as well when we were talking to them at the national championship game. So great hire for Ed Ogeron. I think it's a natural move, and it's okay to get a little bit of fresh blood in there as well. I don't think it was that Tommy Robinson was doing a bad job or anything, especially on the field. The running backs were fairly productive while he was there. Ed Ogeron just thought he could get a little bit more out of it. And so I think it's a very natural replacement, a really good hire, and I think he'll do very, very well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think it's a great hire. And again, I think that being around, like, these off-field coaches aren't allowed to be as hands-on, obviously, as these on-field coaches are. It's just how it works. But he has been around these guys long enough to where if guys like Clyde and them are giving him a lot of credit for their development, then, you know, it's a good thing. And, look, I like this hire because I think that people at times have knocked some of the hires for some of the unknowns. Like, what can they do for recruiting? Most recently, Pelini and Scott Linehan. So Pelini hasn't recruited in the SEC since he was at LSU, 10-plus years ago, obviously. And then he'd been at Youngstown State forever. How would he transition back into recruiting now? You know, rumor was he didn't love it then. And with Linehan, you've got a guy who's been in the NFL forever. Does he transition to recruiting? With a guy like Kevin Faulk, you get a guy who you have no doubt will be one of the best recruiters on your staff. He already had been recruiting for LSU for multiple years, given the position he was in. In fact, he spent more time with your recruits than the coaches did, because often they're out coaching, especially on game days and stuff like that, practices. So he's one of the guys taking recruits around and hanging out with their families. So if you wanted their recruiting staff to move up with any of these recent hires, like, you liked a lot of the hires because of what they bring from a football perspective, a high IQ perspective in terms of how your offense is going to be run, I think that Faulk, sure, he can bring that, but more importantly, maybe he brings an element in recruiting to where almost instantly he probably becomes one of your better recruiters on staff, just given he knows the lay of the land in recruiting right now, like this modern age of recruiting where we're dealing with transfer portals and social media and two signing days, all this different stuff that's been very recent. He's been there for all of that. And I think because of it, he's going to be someone that we look at in the next few years as, look, he's been here, he's staying here, and he's going to be one of your most consistent recruiters each season.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. Good hire for LSU. Good hire for Ed Ogeron. Great news for Kevin Faulk. And best of luck to Tommy Robinson, who moves on to Texas A&M, just the latest LSU assistant to land on former LSU assistant to land on Jimbo Fisher's staff over there in College Station. So LSU fans, you'll at least see him next year if you go to College Station or whenever the Aggies make it back to Baton Rouge, more likely than not. Shay, enough with the football talk. I think it's time to get down to serious business. And that was, how was your Mardi Gras weekend?
Okay, well, it was okay. Let's recap. It was good. And I stuck to my plan, which I'd revealed on the previous podcast, of what my schedule would be. So Friday, Pado's, had a great time there, did a little bit of the courtyard, did the piano bar, was able to get a good bit of daytime parades in with the walking parades in the quarter. So all of that was a good time. Went and watched some parades that evening down on, I think we were down in the magazine area, but had a really good time. Friday, great. Saturday, great. Ended up watching parades pretty much all day, all the way up through the evening. Hopped around a little, ate some food at some different restaurants. And then Sunday did the Bacchus Ball, which was a really fun time. Second time I've done that, still sticking by my vote that I'll take Bacchus Ball over Endymion, just because it's not as – the size of the ball is not as big as Endymion, certainly when it was in the Superdome especially. But being at the convention center, not being completely packed out, easy to move around and see your friends. I saw a number of people, people from the site, people from LSU, people in the media, Jordy Collada, saw a bunch of different folks. So was a good time. And then Monday tapped out. So, you know, it was back on Monday, and now Tuesday. I'm recording Mardi Gras Day, the pod with you. So I'm not quite the person who can make it 5 days, but Billy, I put in a good, consistent 3 days in New Orleans, and it was a success.
Good to hear, Shay. I ventured down to Spanish Town on Saturday and had a terrific, terrific day down there with James Moran, formerly of Tiger Ag, now doing some work with Scooter Hobbs and the American press out there. And we really attacked it by starting off on Spanish Town Boulevard. We were in between 5th and 6th, great little spot, had a good bit of shade, watched the first round of the parade, and then walked over to Laurel Street where we caught it the second time around. And we had quite the time. We had quite the day. We ended up at Ivar's, ate some wings, watched some LSU baseball. It was a long day, and then actually made the decision to meet some friends and do a little steak cookout dinner. And it was just a little too much, man. It was just a little too much. The early morning got to me, and I missed the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fight. Called it quits. Went home. Passed out on the couch. But a great, great Spanish Town parade. What a wild scene. I enjoyed plenty of the floats. There was a really good one with Odell Beckham Jr. with his dollar bills. Kind of painted on the side from the national championship game. The theme was hindsight 2020. So a lot more Joe Burrow butt than I wanted to see probably again. But great time on Spanish Town. Woke up, kind of chilled around. Ended up kind of going over to Superior and watching some golf on Sunday afternoon and really taking a chill. It's been a long year. I think finally the run to the national championship and through National Sign Day kind of caught up to me the back half of this month. But a great weekend, no doubt, and already looking forward to next year's Mardi Gras. I'll be back in action, I think, for a longer weekend next year.
And so was every Spanish Town float pretty much something about LSU?
Yeah, there was a lot of LSU. There was a good bit of election stuff, which we definitely won't get into.
That's true.
But there were some really entertaining ones. There was Dabo Sweeney was a naked baby, kind of crying. So there was that. They had some fun with Dabo a little bit there. Yeah, dude, a ton of LSU stuff. Just a lot of Joe Burrow love. A lot of Ed Ogeron. There's plenty of it. That was probably the overwhelming part of the parade was all the Joe Burrow, all the LSU. Floats kind of painted around, and then they kind of made light of the upcoming election as well. But pretty wild, great people watching, really outstanding people watching. I'm a big people watcher, and really enjoyed that. One thing I enjoyed as well, kind of moving on from Mardi Gras, was Will Wade's rant on the schedule this week, which he's not happy about. LSU's got the late tip off Wednesday night at Florida, the 9 o'clock Eastern tip, and then they get Texas A&M on Saturday at 11 a.m. in Baton Rouge. So they'll get back around 2-3 a.m. from Florida if they don't go into overtime, and then have to turn around. They'll have Thursday off, prepare on Friday, and then no shoot around on Saturday. So look, I thought his rant probably could have been saved for maybe after the week and maybe attacked the issues then, depending on how they did. It was pretty entertaining when we were sitting in there. He had plenty of thoughts on it, and clearly not happy, but a big matchup nonetheless at Florida Wednesday night. Also Wednesday night, the baseball team takes on Louisiana Tech. So they'll have that and a ton of combine coverage. So kind of a busy week here. But that LSU-Florida game is always a great matchup, at least over the last really year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is another big must-win for LSU. I thought that the past weekend's game was good because they got ahead, and even when they got dicey there at the end, I think what it got down to maybe five or so, that they ended up sticking it out, being able to get away from there and hold on with the win without completely melting at the end. But look, I'll give you, I'm kind of most excited for this game to watch Charles Manning again. I thought he brought all kind of energy. I thought that he was confident when he got the ball on offense, but even more so defensively, what he's able to do for you. Big Charles Manning fan. I really think that you've said it before, but boy, how important is he, not just getting back healthy, but being someone who can really contribute for you, whether it's coming off the bench or putting him into the lineup right away.
Yeah, Charles Manning has been a big, big impact. I liked Will Wade toying with the lineup a little bit, getting some other guys some looks in there. Andre Hyatt made the start at South Carolina, so kind of a wake-up call for the team. A little bit of a tweak there. They needed it after, you know, kind of some disappointing efforts, obviously, and it paid off. Big win at South Carolina. Never easy to beat a Frank Martin team. As much as I love Coach Martin and just kind of how he runs things, playing against his team is physical. It's not fun. And LSU, they got away with another win, 86-80 over South Carolina. They'll look to sweep the Gators Wednesday night in Gainesville, 8 o'clock Central Time on the SEC Network with that one. Shay, I think this pod has gone on long enough. There'll be plenty more of it this week as the combine rolls on. A lot of basketball stuff to recap. And look, we've got to start looking ahead. The dead period is upon us as far as an ending date coming. So it'll be back to full-blown recruiting coverage coming up as well.
Yeah, and look, combine rolls along. We've got baseball, you know, moving right along as well. They got a weekend series, obviously, and an in-state game against La Tech in the midweek. But I'm excited for the weekend, whether it's you're not looking past Florida, but I'm excited about that A&M game, a big jersey retirement coming for the Tigers. And obviously, I'll be focused on this combine with, though we do know a handful of guys are not working out, we'll still get to see some others, Clyde, Justin Jefferson, a ton of these guys on defense. We'll get to see the O-line guys test. It's going to be, I think, a really big week. 16 guys there. So even with the news of a few of them holding back, that there'll be plenty of news to pass along. And I'm excited to see it. I feel like we'll know a little bit more about how many first-rounders LSU can really get once kind of we see everything happen this week, and then word starts to leak out about how they did in interviews.
Yeah, they have the chance to make a historic run on first-round picks. There's no doubt. There's enough talent out there in Indy for LSU. A lot of them probably not going to work out. I don't blame them, so we'll see more of them on Pro Day, but we'll keep you guys locked in on that with who's working out, who's not, with all of our combine coverage this week. Shay, have a great rest of the week. Hope you're well-rested from the Mardi Gras festivities, and hope everyone else had a great and safe Mardi Gras weekend. And happy Mardi Gras, everybody. Happy Fat Tuesday. Thanks for listening to this edition of the pod. Quick reminder to subscribe to Go 24/7. You can do that for just $1, and check that out on the site and get all the VIP coverage as we continue to roll out some recruiting updates on some juniors, rising juniors, and rising seniors, as well as their recruitment start to pick up. A lot of 7-on-7 going on, so recruiting notebooks and takeaways from that rolling out on the site from our national team. So thanks for listening to the pod, guys, and we'll catch you next time.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.